Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. Welcome to Leathertainment Studio Podcast. We have Bill here with District Leather Supply, a supplier in leather craftsman space. I've been following his account on Instagram since I began Pigai. I've done a few purchases, but we never met before this talk. So I'm excited to get to know him through this interview, and hopefully you will get some information and little bits of leather knowledge out of his experience and experiments with leather. So, Bill, welcome. Thank you for being here. Thanks for accepting our invitation and spending time with us. Do you want to start with introducing yourself? Who are you and your leather story, which is my first question always? You know, most of us don't dream about being a leather person when we're a kid. You know, people want to become astronauts and teachers and doctors, but not leather craftsmen. And somehow we all end up being a leather craftsman. How was your story leading to leather?
Yeah, so I'm Bill Wiak. I'm owner of District Leather Supply. And before that, and I guess still District Leather, and that's where the name came from. So I by trade, I'm a HR technology software consultant specialist. I used to implement HR software. Used to lead projects teams. The last team I led was 30 consultants, and very different world from where I am now. So I was on a mission to get a new briefcase because I had, and you could appreciate this probably, a Tumi leather briefcase that started fading and falling apart on me. And at the time I thought it was awesome, right? Or when I first got it. And I started looking into some other brands that were more durable, and really just started educating myself about leather some more as best as I could. Loved the idea of having something that may outlive me. It was really cool. This is the long version, by the way. The Apple Watch had just come out, and I'm a tech nerd also. It was available for pre-order. So I went to pre-order that. And there was an option for a leather watch strap. It was like $150 more. And I thought to myself, okay, well, one of the places I'm looking at bags right now, they have scrap kits for bags for $25. So I bet I can make a watch strap. I made a leather trucker wallet back when I was like 13. I could figure this out. So I bought the scrap, bought some cheap tools on Amazon, and the first thing I made was just awful. It was terrible. I just kept at it, kept pursuing, not perfection necessarily, but just wanted to get better, have something I could present to others, and, started getting card cases, wallets, continuing watch straps, and just discover this whole world that I never knew even existed. And there's so much knowledge. It's so deep. And a lot of it's hidden and buried, and it was fascinating. It was like exploring this whole thing that I never knew anybody that knew about this. So it was like learning about magic, and
it's like a secret society.
Yeah, exactly. And some of it still is. So it's cool. It's mysterious. And one of the things, I'm kind of getting off track here, but, about that, when I first got leather to work with, it felt so wrong cutting it. Like, I felt like I was doing something bad. Like, you're not supposed to do this, right? I kind of liked that. Like, I was breaking a rule. Like, okay, this is something that not everybody does on a regular basis. So, when I was still a consultant, I traveled all over the place with a leather kit in my back or my suitcase, and worked in the hotel at night. And just kept pushing, and eventually built a side hustle and sold leather goods. Worked a lot with Shel Cordovan from Horween. Fell in love with that leather, made small goods, watch straps, card cases, wallets. Eventually got into belts, and had wanted to get into shoes and footwear for a long time. And that's another thing we could talk about. But I fell in love with the craft and all aspects of it, the learning, that mystery again, the mystique. It was kind of cool that I was the leather worker that people knew, you know, like the only one in my group. I liked that, and just different. And then just how focused and peaceful the experience is working with leather at night, you know, at a workbench. I love that. And I still love it when I get some time to do that. So that hasn't gone away. So I've been at this now for actually this month. It marks 8 years. 8 years since I
first
years. Started.
So that was like 2015-ish when you were consulting and still doing the leather.
Yep.
As a side. Perfect. Well, your story aligns so much with mine. So, you know, I was born into a tannery, family-owned tannery, and I was making leather starting 10, 11 years old. But in 2009, I moved to the United States out of a just out of blue green card, and leather was not a big thing, so I did a bunch of different things. I was a cab driver in Chicago for 3 years. Anyways, I went back to school to become a consultant. I got my MBA, got into management consulting, first time corporate job, and I'm a cab driver going into corporate, so first time I wanted to get myself a nice briefcase. I never had a nice leather briefcase before, so I started going into these brands. And I haven't found what I was looking for. I love natural leathers, you know, being from the tannery. I'm not going to buy this heavily finished leather goods. And everything was like that and insanely expensive. I'm like, hold on. I've never been in this experience before, but something is wrong here. And it kind of started to make sense to me. A lot of my friends were asking, like, hey, I just bought this, paid this much. Can you check? Is it good? Is it even leather? Because it's so plasticky, they don't feel the thing. So I'm like, that's why maybe they're asking me. And that started to make me think about leather again. And I realized I couldn't fit into corporate world. I tried to bear with it for a year and I quit my job not knowing what I'm going to do. And I came back and started doing crafts for the first time, you know, watching YouTubes and trying to learn just like you described. But I couldn't wait to quit my job. I went back to Uber driving and I was doing leather projects in my Uber when I'm waiting for a client. So it perfectly aligns, and this was 2016. So we kind of get into the same line with very similar stories, I think. It's so interesting. So now you started doing leather work and selling that, I'm thinking maybe on Etsy or things like that. And how did it turn to District Leather Supply? Now you're supplying people like us, right? Because it's a mysterious world, especially if you're coming from completely non-leather background. You have no idea where to get leather, how to even search for it, what to say, what to ask. So how did it evolve into helping these people find the supplies that they're looking for?
Yeah. I guess I'm going to pick up a little bit more of that story, so the backstory. So side hustle, wholesale stuff. March 2017 is when I left my corporate job to do leather full time, and out of my basement, trying to come up with a plan. Had some wholesale accounts, but you know, it was a gamble. I just, like a lot of people when they get started, I kind of overbought everything. That was another aspect of leathercraft that I love, is that there were so many tools and types of leather and things like that. I didn't know about it, and there wasn't a lot of information out there. So I bought all these things to try out, to understand whether I wanted to adopt them into my aesthetic. I wanted to work with them. You know, what did I like? What did I not like? And I love that exploration, that aspect of it. It felt really personal. So I amassed a whole bunch of extra tools and leather that I'm glad I bought all that stuff for a lot of reasons, but there wouldn't be District Leather Supply without it. So at the time, there weren't many businesses selling leather in small quantities. And I recognized that not everybody, I shouldn't say that I could, but I put all this on my credit card. So I ended up with probably $20,000 worth of leather on the shelf and tools and things like that that I just picked up either because it was a good deal or it looked interesting, needed to recover some of that money and pay some bills. And so I set up a quick website, and listed a lot of this stuff. I decided to cut panels and out of that leather I had on the shelf. And yeah, that was the genesis of it. So that was late August, early September 2017. So about 6 months in to my full-time leather crafter endeavor. And then eventually kind of ramped down district leather over the course of 9-12 months. And then by October of the next year, I moved out of my basement into the first warehouse.
Perfect. Yeah, that's an interesting way to go to supplier route in after developing an interest towards crafting leather. But I'm glad you did that. And as you said, it's a huge need, especially back then. You know, you can't go to the tanneries and, hey, can I get a skin or two? You know, yeah. they look at you like, go away. You know, they work.
Let alone a cut of the skin, you know, not
yeah,
just a
yeah.
double shoulder. You know, so, you want a $20 piece of leather? What?
Yeah, like we don't do that kind of stuff. Being from the tannery, still today, some tanneries I go to with my brand, they're like, "Are you sure you can order enough for my drum size?" I'm like, "What's your drum size?" 3,000 square foot minimum. I'm like, "Well, I might be able to if I start working with your leather, but with that mindset, I don't think you're gonna survive a long time with this changing space. So I think you need to shrink your drum size a little bit." So, but I'm glad you did. You're serving this crowd that is coming into the leather space, exploring, trying to learn and get their hands dirty with leather. And there's not a lot of you guys in the U.S. right now. I don't know. I know about 3-4 maybe helps this way. So it's a huge service. So totally appreciate what you're doing, what you have been doing. And I was, as I said, I'm following your Instagram account. I saw that I sense a little bit shift on the focus towards like shoemaking. I wanted to ask about that. Like, can you tell me more how and why are you kind of shaping into the shoe space, which is great. You know, there is a specialization and being niche, going further and further into a category. And I know the other suppliers don't do that kind of stuff. So it's distinguishing yourself. I see it as a very smart business move on that end. Well, what can you tell us, like, how and why is it happening? Where is it going?
Yeah, so I think two main reasons. It starts with my big weird feet. I wear a size 15 sneaker or like a 14 triple E dress shoe, bigger even sometimes. And so it's always been hard for me to find shoes. In my consulting days, like if I found a 14 triple E, usually Allen Edmonds, I'd go ahead and pick it up. And so I've got a closet full of those now. I need to do something with, but
you can send me people asking me to cut LM.
Oh yeah.
So far.
I'll send you some, man. I got a couple of good ones, so no problem. I like to see what's inside of those. So just an interest overall in trying to find nice and also a little bit unique footwear, something that not everybody had in the conference room. And so that got me looking around. And then about the same time that I started looking into briefcases, something more durable. And this was, I think workwear had been really, had taken off and had been kind of resurging for a few years at that point. I started looking at Red Wings and other types of boots, and they were really attractive. I ended up picking up a few pairs and squeezing my feet into them. And I actually like messed up my toe pretty badly. I'm looking down at my toe like everybody can see it. it was really frustrating that I could buy these things, but I couldn't wear them. And I met at one point like the regional sales rep for Red Wing at a store event. And I asked him if they could do like a custom version of something for me, or just like do a mock toe using this last so it's wider. And he laughed at me. He's like, "No, we're not going to do that." And I left the shop with a like really bad taste in my mouth. And the motivation at that point that I'm going to figure this out, whether it's get some boots, modify them myself, or eventually make my own. So it started with boots. Going on eBay, buying used Red Wings, taking them apart, trying to study the anatomy of them, figuring out how they work, what were the components. And, you know, back then too, nothing on YouTube about this. You could go find a cobbler, see if you can get information from them. But it was a hands-on approach. And I loved it. So continuing with that, I still wanted to make boots. And there's a sneaker maker, Jacob Ferrato, JBF. He's in Cleveland. And I reached out to him about getting some training to make sneakers. And I thought, okay, well, if there's no boot training out there that I knew of, let me start with sneakers. And let me look at just making the upper, the top part of the sneaker. And then it goes into a rubber cup sole. So essentially it's not fair to say half the work, but once you finish the upper, essentially you're finished. Whereas with boots, once you finish the upper, you're maybe halfway or less than halfway done. So started with sneakers, went to train with JBF. And that was June of 2019. So almost 4 years ago now. And similar to the motivation for starting DLS and really pushing that and trying to save folks time and create shortcuts for them so that they could focus on their craft and building their business or just enjoying it rather than searching out stuff and dealing with vendors. I took my experience from getting into shoe craft and trying to source materials and figure out certain tricks or just basic knowledge and wanted to open it up to a broader audience. And in addition, create an opportunity for folks who were making just wallets and maybe wanted to branch off and work on something new, provide an avenue for them to try that out. So that's one part of it. And the other part is early on with DLS, I was focusing a lot on the competition and trying to bring in similar stuff and just in this space with how few competitors there are. And I don't know, it got really frustrating. It didn't feel like the right move. And so at one point, a couple of years in, I just decided, listen, I'm going to put my blinders on. I'm going to do my thing. I'm going to keep following my passion and just not even pay attention to what they're doing. And I decided that footwear is niche and kind of an underserved space, and that I would jump in and do what I could to make it happen.
No, that's very smart. And yeah, I think that's a very helpful service to the community. I know a lot of shoe enthusiasts are there, and some people may want to branch into a new challenge in leather working. I have no idea about how shoes are done. You know, I've never attempted to make any shoes myself. I've been into many shoe factories. When we were a tannery, I had a lot of shoe factory customers. I've been in there. I have good friends that had like huge shoe factories. I know how complex it is, the machinery, the processes it can get. So now it's in my mind, can someone make shoes without even having machinery, like completely handmade? Is it even possible? And if so, like, how do you start? Like, what do you need in the basic terms and where do you get them? Like, what's the process?
Yes, I wondered that too. And I got some answers. So I trained with a few different shoemakers, shoe repair folks, really, really talented. When I studied with Marcel Mersan, he's used to be in Savannah. He's in Pennsylvania now. I made a pair of boots. Actually, hey, I didn't mean to do this, but I made these.
Oh, really?
And yeah,
it looks solid.
It weighs like 9 pounds. Just this one. No, not literally,
probably,
but
like full solid sole leather and all that. Like maybe a couple layers. See.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And
exactly.
So, what machinery or what tools you need to make something like that?
Well, I use a sewing machine for the upper. An eyelet press for the eyelets. This was hand sewn. All of this was hand sewn.
Really?
Everything
that
through the sole is hand sewn.
Well, that sounds like a lot of work, hand sewing that.
It was a ton of work. Marcel gave me a lot of help, and my hands hurt a lot. So it takes a lot of hand strength and endurance there. But, I mean, what I learned in this process is that a person could, with leather, glue, a knife, needles and thread, and a few other hand tools, they can make a shoe from scratch. So it's really incredible that that's even possible.
Now you made me very curious.
So yeah, I mean, there were things that helped us, you know, having a sanding machine, having a bladder press to help set the glue in the sole and everything. But cord wainers people have been wearing shoes for a long time, and these machines haven't existed, and so that's the only way to make them. It's so fascinating to me. I'm still just enamored by it all, and I don't know, hungry to keep learning and keep going. And anyway, so I love this. Crazy. You probably see the smile on my face.
Definitely. Passion comes through always whenever you hit the right question here. I love seeing that. And now you made me very curious about this. I'm thinking about those shoes or boots sometimes. It is so hard to take apart, you know, cutting those welt stitches. They're so tight, so thick leather going there and all that stuff. I wasn't thinking it would be possible to hand stitch those things, but I don't know, maybe I'm going to come back to you to learn some of those stuff just for fun and another challenge in leather learning. Okay.
Yeah, man. And my hope too is, you know, we teach sneakers classes here, and that's a lot of fun, but I want to get back to boots and dress shoes and things like that. And so we're going to start hosting classes here. I don't have a date yet, but that's the next step, is to offer supplies to make boots and dress shoes, you know, the outsole leather, anyway, all the stuff. And I want to bring people into it because so many people are interested.
That's perfectly leading into my next question. I saw that course sign up thing on the website, and I know you guys did something in Teneri Opera, right, in Italy last year.
Yeah.
I follow that Instagram story. Odin was there as well. So
yeah.
I was like, wow, that's really cool. I've been watching the Opera's articles. They seem like they have beautiful articles. I've never seen one in person yet. But so I wanted to ask that course structure, like, how does the course is going to work? Like, how many days? What are you going to learn? Can you come as a like complete rookie like myself and then be able to do something at the end of it? Like, what's the course objective?
Yeah, so there are two kind of training / experience offerings, and we're starting out with doing what we call the experience once a year. So the next one's coming up end of September, and it's loosely tied to the timing of Linea Pelle. So they can kind of be there and kill two birds with one stone. So that experience, we gather a group of folks. We stay at this really, really nice villa for the entire week. And each morning we work on making sneakers for 5 days. And then in the afternoon, we go out and tour different tanneries. And then last September, we also went to a shoe factory. And then on the last day, we went to Trezetta, which is a sole factory, which was amazing. They make all the sole, or make soles in Italy for Louis, Hermes, Chanel, and Balenciaga, and a whole bunch of other brands. And it was really cool to see. I can go on about that for another half hour. But in the premise of this, well, first of all, I just want to do something different. Nobody else that I'm aware of is doing something like this, where you get a hands-on experience crafting, and then you also get kind of this like backstage tour to so many aspects of this industry. And I've been fortunate enough to be able to go out there, visit the tanneries, build these relationships. And it's because of this business, and I'm able to spend money to buy inventory here. And, you know, that opens some doors. But not, you know, somebody off the street couldn't necessarily have the same experience. And it's so magical. And I enjoy it so much when I go over there that I wanted to share it with others. That's the reason that we did that. And we had at least one person in the class in Tuscany who had never touched a sewing machine before, ever, had never done any leather craft, And yeah, some of the stitch lines were a little bit off, but he walked out with a pair of shoes that he can wear. And he was really, really proud. And I think he did a great job.
That's wonderful. And, you know, the experience side of it, I love going to the region. I've been multiple times now to San Miniato, Santa Croce, those villas, the food, and, you know, the nature, the tanneries. It's amazing. I know you sell some of the leathers from those tanneries and great people, LPA, MPG. I work with them. That's a wonderful place to be and learn and experience leather. So great thinking and great work you did for those people, I think. And so when we are talking about San Miniato, Santa Croce, you're working, I think, more than 5-6 tanneries from that region. Like, what is your favorite article? What's your favorite tannery? Like, what's... You know, I might be asking a dangerous question. You know, you may not want to give an answer to hurt any other person, but
gonna hurt some feelings.
Feel free to
yeah.
skip it. Yeah.
When I got into this at first, I was really, I fell in love with kind of rugged pull-up leathers. You know, a lot of what I found at Horween, and I still love like Dublin, for example. I love it. It's awesome. So when I see a really nice rugged article over in that region, it catches my attention. And one of the leathers that we offer is called Aragona from MPG, and it's got that look, it's got the vibe, the really rugged nature, and it's also grain corrected too, and it's got kind of a satin finish. So when you look at it, it looks beat up and ugly and just awesome. And then when you feel it, it's just silky smooth. So it's this kind of perfect amalgamation of both of those things. And so that's one of my favorites. I really do like that. And La Perla has some great things. The other tanneries do too. And I've had, with Opera, I've had a lot of fun. Those guys are, they are excited about creating new things and just trying stuff and not worried about failing, and they'll work with, and you know this too, one of the best things about that region is all the third party finishers and the I guess not tertiary, but supplemental services that can be offered there because there's so many tanneries. And so I feel like Opera takes advantage of that more than most of the other tanneries that I work with. And so just come up with crazy stuff, and it's fun. And especially for our customers who are shoemakers or want to make some wild bags, and just do something different that stands out, like we're able to do that. And so it's like being in the leather kitchen and just having this full pantry of whatever. And I love that part of it. Like I just think of something and then we figure out how to make it happen. It's so cool. I love it.
Exactly. Leather kitchen is the right word. And yes, that region is so intensified, probably not the only region in Italy, probably Arzignano, the north part, may have even further things because of the bigger tanneries, but having access to all the chemical companies that help you develop your articles, you know, you can go knock their door. Did they help you in any way possible with super technical knowledge? Because they want to sell you their chemicals, and you know, you are in abundance of every resource. Believe me, that tannery side, once you get behind that drum and then start working with the leather in the water, it's another like deep well of pleasure. It's another world. So I love being in tanneries. So, and that's a great place to be in a tannery in Santa Croce. So
yeah, man.
Now I want to, go ahead.
I was just going to say about the finishing products and the additives and stuff. Like one of my favorite things about going there and visiting different tanneries is the sago that each tannery uses, the veg tan tanneries. Like, it's unique to every tannery. It's always different. It's a secret recipe. Like, there's so much parity there. Like, each tannery can do most of what other tanneries do in terms of like veg tan. At least that's my my take on it. And that sago is the one thing that kind of sets them apart. You know, you smell Badalassi, you smell La Perla, you smell, and you touch something from MPG and Artigiano di Coio as well. Like, anyway, I love that. I love that you could pick up a leather, smell it, touch it, and without like seeing a label or anything, in a lot of cases, you could tell which tannery it's from.
Exactly. And you know, this is gonna sound a little weird, but I love LPA. It's one of my top it, for the smell, for the fat liquor combination they have. Actually, it's Lardmore. And I love that raw, like heavy smell of it. It may be a little too heavy for some people, but I love their Missouri article. It's probably one of the
Oh,
best leathers
yeah.
I've ever worked with. And we make a lot of stuff with it. And first time I smelled that, experienced that 3 4 years ago, I made a belt to myself. And during the day, I'm just like taking it close to my nose. I'm like, I'm smelling it 5 times a day, like a creepy person, but it just smells so good. And the smell doesn't go away. The belt is still there. It's been 4 or 5 years and it still has the same smell. I'm just blown away by it. And I think I will use that leather forever. It's awesome. So I want to just take it to a kind of different topic. Like, as you and I went into this leather crafting after being in corporate world for a while and all that stuff, and I see lots of people are showing an interest towards that leather craft recently, and probably that's why the DLS exists and some other people exist in this space trying to serve this crowd. So why do you think this is happening, and how this is going to change the industry or the way we experience leather?
I don't know. I think there could be a lot of potential reasons for that, but I think about when it really started to pick up. Some of the early like internet crafters. I guess they were around 2010 or so, 2012.
With
I
Etsy
think
and
that.
stuff.
Yeah, I think a movement started then, and it wasn't just with leather, but home crafting and having a side hustle. And I think,
Woodworking.
yeah, woodworking too. So, the more or there were more folks doing this and showing what they were doing, and it sounds really, but yeah, so more content, and visibility into the craft and exposure and some sort of, I don't know, demystification is a word, but some of that, and I think that's one major aspect of it. Another one is probably maybe like a social disconnect. Maybe that's not the right way to put it, but like you go on social media. Facebook was really big in that time frame, and I don't know, maybe I was not necessarily searching for something genuine and authentic and kind of taking me back to working with my hands, but I found it and I loved it, and maybe we all just, or a lot of people kind of needed that, some sort of break from, yeah, I don't know. So,
My theory is pretty close to, I think, what you experienced or what I experienced, also probably what you're explaining now. Like, you were in IT consulting, you're looking at a screen almost all day, you know, your work is virtual. And as you said, like, you want to do something with your hands, you can see the end product, and you go to your hotel room, you take out your leather work. That takes you in a different world. It's kind of like a meditation, you know, grounding yourself into the physical world, being in virtual workforce for, you know, 8 hours of the day or longer. And now we feel this need, maybe, you know, as human beings. That was my theory, like what inspired more people and seeing these content on social media, like, oh, it's not that difficult. Now I can buy one skin from DLS and I can start doing it myself too, maybe. And then once they try it, like, oh, that's satisfactory. Let me challenge myself further. That's my theory. I think that probably an instinct that we feel internally. We don't even know why or how.
Yeah, I think you're right. And then also just like the omnipresent nature of leather. It's everywhere. And whether, and I say this, if you're the veganiest vegan in Brooklyn, you're still holding on to the leather strap in the subway, right? So everybody encounters it every day, and yet it's something that most people hardly know anything about. they hear the terms full grain and Napa and Italian leather, and like nobody, a lot of people don't really know what that means. So I think as soon as there was some more insight and exposure to working with leather and some knowledge there, a lot of people were just intrigued by that. And that's what pulled me in too, is just getting to learn more about something that I see and I encounter every day. So yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah, I agree. And I really love to see like more and more people coming into the space and pouring on their own designs, on their own talents. And now they have access to reaching to the end user directly themselves using Etsy, using Shopify's, which in my opinion experience like enriches the experience of the leather consumer, like endless choices, probably better fair prices. If you're into leather and leather quality only, now you have ever expanding choices, and I think it's just gonna make us leather consumer better eventually.
Yeah,
That's
and I
like
love that. Yeah, go ahead.
that's my expectation, as a result of this movement or trend.
And another part of it I love and related to that is there have been leather goods brands for a long time. Now, big brands. There are brands now that are one person, and through social media. And I did this too. Like I presented myself as the brand and folks got to know me. And with DLS, same thing. I'm just totally open on social media and I'm me. And maybe that's the reason that a lot of people, or some people maybe buy from DLS, is because they know who I am and I'm the brand, and either they can relate or they like the story or they want to just support or whatever. And that's happening with leather goods brands too, just the one person or the couple people. So there are a lot more options there, and it feels good when you buy something from a business again that you can either relate to or just you want to support because for whatever reason. Yeah, I think from a consumer side, and from a market side, it created this more or a viable business opportunity for a lot of crafters. And that's another aspect we haven't talked about is leather craft is low cost of entry, and it's also one of the few hobbies I think that you can get into and pretty easily start recouping your investment, whether it's friends and
Indeed.
family that you're selling to or you get into a market or whatever, and it can be self-sustaining. That's one of the things I liked about it too, is I could go spend money and I would get the money back if I was smart about it. I wasn't just buying stuff to fill up the garage.
Indeed. Perfect. Actually, perfect aspect of having a hobby that might pay for itself, if you position it that way. Yeah, I agree. And I love that. So.
And a lot of people's spouses were more likely to support that too.
Yeah, agree. And you might make your wife a bag, she might be able to use it. It's a lot more meaningful, right, than buying something else, or vice versa. If you're the wife interested in leather crafting, you make a belt for your husband. It's another meaningful thing instead of just going buying from somewhere else. And one thing you said, the consumer, I think Gen Z is becoming more and more, prominent in the economy every year now. And they have a different approach to these brands and marketing. They like more meaning. They like to see the people behind it. I think that's why probably they relate to this. Oh, I know the person behind this brand. He is the brand.
Yeah.
I want to buy from him. I want to connect. I know his stories. So they prefer that over dealing with a corporation. They are kind of not so much fan of establishments. So there is that force as well in the market, changing the way the economical models will shape this industry, I think. That which all makes me happy. So I don't know.
Yeah, and there's a personal called connection. There's emotion there. There's I really like this person. These are Bill's wallets. They're great. And then the customers are more likely to tell other people about it because it's a source of pride too. It's like, maybe I found this brand. I have this thing. Check it out. It's really cool. And there hasn't always been something like that. So
Nope.
I think that's a unique aspect of this.
Absolutely. So what is your recommendation for a person who develops this interest? You know, I want to start poking around with leather and I want to learn the craft side of it. What resources you can recommend them, like where to go to acquire knowledge, the basic tools, leathers, crafts, like what's available for them as first steps?
I haven't really had to think about that for a while. I think that we are sort of, I don't want to say we're intermediate level in nut supplies here. It's not really fair because we definitely serve a lot of beginners, but you know, from an education standpoint and a product offering standpoint, you know, we don't stock the $10 tools or $15 tools, you know, so that's a tough one, but for knowledge, that's hard to say too, man, because there are several prominent internet crafters, that are out there. And man, I'm trying to think of the crafter that I really got into. I started watching, but a lot of what he used, was from Tandy, and that's totally cool. That's totally fine. But when I watched him and all his videos, like that was my world. That was my understanding. I didn't really know what was available outside of that. So when it came to spending money, those are the things I bought because from watching the videos, that's what I knew how to use. And maybe there's some nicer thread or nicer tools out there. And I didn't necessarily feel comfortable getting those things, cause I hadn't seen them being used. So, I would just say, I don't know. Try to connect with some folks that you see on YouTube or wherever that you like, that you enjoy watching. And just remember there are many, many different perspectives in the craft. And so it may not be the best thing to just focus on one and deep dive there, but try to enjoy the buffet. Try to take in a little bit from all over the place. And it may be a good idea to do that before you start spending a lot of money on the craft. I made that, I'm calling it a mistake, but not everybody could do that. So, yeah, that's a tough one, man. I'm still struggling with the answer for that. But I'd say also in terms of spending, keep it minimal to begin with. Start with some basic tools. Focus on the fundamentals. You don't need a lot of fancy stuff to learn how to glue and, you know, an edge properly, sew it and finish the edge. So start with those kinds of things and then and work your way towards new materials and more complex problems and situations.
Exactly. And I think, as you said, back in the day, it was a little less the materials and tutorials on YouTube and stuff like that. I remember I was watching Ian Atkinson from UK. He was buying a lot of things from Tandy. I learned a lot from his videos and all that stuff. But today, I think there's literally endless. There's so many people providing a lot more things. Just do, you know, YouTube University is the good place to start and probably keep the spending minimum. Those are good starting advices because it's a huge space. Once you figure out where you're going to go, then you can dive and invest deeper. I would agree with those suggestions heavily. And from a consumer standpoint, let's say I'm a leather shoe enthusiast. You know, I want to have always the fancy shoes and custom shoes or things like that. Where do I go to get myself a nice pair of custom shoes today, like a dress shoes? Is it even possible online searching or ordering a pair that's handmade, you know, really, really like bespoke pieces? Since you're in the shoe making space, you might know a few things that I have no idea about.
There are several pricing tiers when it comes to
they can get pretty expensive, but you know, most of the times folks are okay paying a little extra, but you know, from mid to high price points, if there are any things that you can recommend that might be helpful to some people.
Okay, because I was going to say, we start talking about bespoke in the UK, you know, we hit $10,000 for a pair of shoes pretty quickly. So,
ooh,
yeah. To be honest, in terms of let's say in the US, custom shoemakers, dress shoemakers, Marcel is the first one that comes to mind, although I'm not sure how many custom commissions he does these days. He's focused a lot on education and consulting. I don't know too many other makers in that high-end space. So, something I'm still learning about and continuing to network. But yeah, I think if you're looking for something nice and bespoke, be prepared to see something at 3 to 5 thousand for something really nice.
Okay, I
It
see.
goes for
I didn't know.
sneakers too. Maybe yeah, it wouldn't always hit 5 thousand necessarily for sneakers, but the range for most, let's say, custom Jordan right now, anywhere from 1,000 to 2,500. From a bunch of different makers, and that depends on the material and who you're getting it from. So, yeah, and that's part of the reason that a lot of folks are getting into it too, is because it can be, if not lucrative, it can at least be definitely worth the time and effort, to make a pair, to
Sounds
get the
like it.
supplies and get all the training. So just like leathercraft in general, but in bigger chunks there.
Yeah, sounds like it. You make a couple sales a month, you might have actually a profitable side hustle that you can
Yeah.
work with over here. Yeah, very nice. I had no idea about the pricing, price ranges, and stuff like that. So it's great. And probably people can reach out to you if they're interested in getting reaching out to those people and getting into this side of the business to make some shoes and maybe have
Yeah, and
get
if
a
I don't
side
have the
hustle started.
answers, I can probably connect you with somebody who does. So, and that's one thing too. I'm not afraid to admit that I don't know everything here, and I think that was something I had to understand early on, is that it's really important to have a good network, have folks that can help you and other people get answers.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's an endless space, like everything else. You just gotta keep exploring. But it's very rewarding. It feels very satisfactory. So it's kind of like all my questions here. I don't know if I missed anything. You have something else that we might touch upon before.
I mean, there's a lot of things. There's so many things going on now too, and I'm just really excited to see where the maker space is, especially in leathercraft, in the next 3 to 5 years. I've seen so much already just in the short amount of time I've been in it, and that goes for information and knowledge sharing to supplies and tools, like. When in my first year, I bought some Blanchard French picking irons, and at that time, like, that was it. They were the best. And then within probably 12 months of me getting those, some of the brands coming out of Asia started coming out and blew those away. And so I've got, yeah, it's a whole lot. I have a lot of Blanchard irons still in my shop, that I'm not going to say they're obsolete necessarily, but it goes back to my caution about spending a lot early on.
Exactly.
That things change, yeah, things change, and other things come along that are more useful and helpful, and just be cautious there. So I don't regret buying them. I'm going to put them in a shadow box one day, but like in terms of resale, like
Yeah, they were expensive.
totally different world. Yeah.
Right. And yeah, there is really high quality material coming up. I've seen some from Korea. And even China, there is some good stuff coming up. I have seen some
Yeah.
people making good stuff in Turkey. I actually experimented with some of the tools under a brand Tennerstein. I sell some of the leathers I use, and we made some tools and basic machinery with those makers in Turkey. So literally, they started to make really competitive stuff with those established brands that was really expensive before. And that's the reason, right? Like the margins are very attractive. They get into it and they're actually not that bad. So you might start with those beginner stuff. They might be just as good as those brand level stuff.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So I want to ask you a question. So what What have you seen in the last 5 years in the craft that excite you and get you stoked for the future?
Well, this movement of people coming into the leather space, either for a hobby or starting their own brand, their side hustles, because of the e-commerce evolution, right? E-commerce is changing every industry, but I think the way it is changing leather is very fascinating to me, because now I, as a one-man operation at my garage or spare bedroom, that's how it started, learn from YouTube, get leathers from one skin or two and enhance stitch it, sell it, have a very profitable business right away in a month or two. If I know what I'm doing, you know, just not going crazy with spending and all that stuff, but this can turn into a business that can sustain your family. And if you're really talented, offering good value, good design to people, it can become into something really lucrative soon. Like, regardless what you're doing, you can do wallets, you can do shoes. Some areas might be more profitable, lucrative than others. So it's up on you to figure it out. But with this trend, I think these trends, which required the leather brands to have a store, a distribution network, connections to the tanneries, large capital, you know, all that stuff is gone now. You don't have to have any of that to become a leather brand and serve the leather community. So, which makes those barriers to entry completely obsolete. People can come in and start offering their services. Where I see this industry is going is the market share for leather will expand overall, because leather is a natural material. The interest is, I think, increasing with shared knowledge and social media, but the increased market share, I believe, will be distributed between tens of thousands of new brands and makers, which offer quality material and craftsmanship to people, to the true leather enthusiast, instead of those established brands, which, in my opinion, they do a good job. Definitely, you know, great quality products. We look at it, but not to the price points they charge, because it's not about the leather. It's about the status and prestige they sell to people. And again, that's a service those small craftsmen cannot do. And if you're looking for the prestige, you go buy from those brands. But with the Gen Z's approach to more meaning, more connection, and real people behind brands, I think the luxury space will shrink a little bit. Maybe it's going to be even more expensive, more exclusive for people who care about that prestige. But the true leather enthusiasts will be able to enjoy much diverse and rich leather design, leather quality, and craftsmanship in the next 10, 20 years to come. That's where I see this is going with the e-commerce evolution. And that makes me super excited.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And I think that when you've got so many people that now are getting into this and also developing a skill, we're going to see that not everybody necessarily wants to be an entrepreneur and drive their own brand and business, and they just really love leathercraft and they would be totally content being a crafter for a living. And I think that presents an opportunity for maybe some other type of business to leverage those folks as a distributed workforce or crowdsourcing. So you can have a, you know, coalition of makers that produce a line of products anyway, so I think we're going to see some different types of business models out there leveraging the talent and the skill out in the space.
I 100% agree and can't wait to see and experience all of them. So that's one of my missions, I believe. I want to help people understand this material better, and I want to help people explore those newcomers, new brands that truly offer a good value to the market, because they might not have the budgets to get in front of all those eyeballs. I'm trying to get them send their products to me and open it up and share my thoughts with people. So, like, you have one more option over there. Go check it out. If you like it, you buy it. You know, this is the type of leather that you use. So that's what I'm trying to do with some of the content we're creating here.
Yeah, man, I think it's fantastic what you're doing. Absolutely.
Thank you.
And I think one angle to also consider And I try to think about this too, because I always want to carry the best stuff. I want to offer the best leather supplies, tools that I can. But there's also a side of this from a business standpoint where, I mean, there's a huge market for products that aren't made from the absolute best leather, and there are plenty of tanneries out there that make some mid-grade and lower-grade products. And I think we as crafters tend to look at the superior materials out there, but there's space for other things too. So that's one area where I want to become more educated is, what are some of these mid-range leathers? What are their applications? What are ways that crafters can use them, whether it's to increase profits or just hit different price points and serve different markets? Because there's an opportunity there too. It doesn't all have to just be top high end.
Exactly. And it's very hard in leather. Leather is a natural material. As those hides don't come pretty at all times. We take the raw hides in the tannery. Only 5% of them are clean enough to make something very transparent with it. And the other 95, you have to get creative. Some of it, you have to correct it. You have to emboss it, pigments, finishes. There's endless spaces, finishes you can apply to it to make something out of it, but it's being done. So, there is no leather going to garbage anyways. Tannery industry and leather crafting is pretty creative, but that's a great point. Actually, we try to talk about like high quality leathers all the time, but maybe we try to make some content about like what's the mid quality leather looks like in the tannery and what happens out of those. Actually, they are all going into the market and we're all using it, but we don't know because it's finished so good that you don't think that's a bad leather anymore. That's the art of the tannery. Actually, the art and artisanship of the tannery is to make the best out of each leather, whatever it requires, right? If it's full of scratches and blemishes, then we have to just buff it off, apply a little thicker finish, use pigments, use embossing techniques, keep it as natural as possible, still not to make it too plasticized. But at the end of that procedure, that looks like a beautiful leather again. And so many big brands use these leathers. To be honest, that's the thing I'm trying to explain. Like, okay, this leather is great, but it's not that special. I don't need the best of leathers to make this. I this as a tannery, this is great stuff for me. If I have a customer comes to me and asks me, can you make this leather? Oh yeah, I can, because raw material is readily available for this. But there are leathers that you can't use every leather. It's the rare stuff which artisans love and try to work. But everything eventually turns into something beautiful in this like line of art, I think.
Yeah, and you make a good point there, really good point, and about the percentage yield. And a lot of folks don't consider that. I didn't consider that in the beginning, but only so much leather can be aniline finished, have very little finish, or aniline dyed, very little finish on it, and the rest of it, something else happens to it. And for my customers, some people get frustrated because they. The majority of the Italian leather that we have is grain corrected just a little bit. And there are misconceptions out there about that. And I know you're trying to combat those and help folks with information. And I'm trying to do the same thing. But folks get frustrated, and it is a natural product, and not everybody is okay with that. They want something really homogenous. But to look at, let's say, like Apollo from MPG, and then look at something like Epsom, a lot of people would prefer the Epsom, not knowing any different. And like and a tannery could use second, third selection for that stuff.
Oh, Epsom is a like heaven for tannery. I think like Epsom or Epileather or this Sulfianos. I can use virtually a really wide range of leathers to accomplish the same result as long as my tanning is good, my finish is good. It's gonna cover whatever imperfections is underneath, and it's not a bad thing. As long as you understand this is a finish and there is desired qualities to it. It's easy to clean, looks shiny and beautiful and new for a long time until it starts cracking and falling apart. It doesn't patina, which the person doesn't want it to patina. So that's perfect for that market. But my point is, don't think that is the highest level of leather because it's coming from a super high-end brand at a super high price point. It is very mediocre stuff, or it could be done with mediocre stuff. And this is to say that I know those big brands really have a almost monopoly on collecting all the high-end rawhides in Europe and all that stuff. They have the power to, they collect everything. Nobody else can buy those high-end rawhides. And sometimes they finish it into those pieces. To me, I'm like, I'm hurtful, like kind of like wasting a good resource over there. So, but you know, this is how it is. It's fine. I'm not saying those are bad leathers. Those are highly standardized leathers for specific purposes, and I'm totally fine with it. But as long as you know what you're buying, that's all fine.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, man. It's I don't know, this is the kind of stuff, and I love these conversations with industry folks because I get all this great insight and understand things that I didn't before, and I think about the business of a tannery and what they do, and I never really considered that perspective or appreciated it. So, and in addition, another thing I love is going to tanneries, going to finishers, looking at the machines, the equipment, really understanding what they do. And it goes back to, you know, I was talking about opera and just creating stuff in the kitchen, understanding what can be done to the leather to manipulate it, to turn it into something that, that I'm looking for or something unique and, different properties. And so, you know, milling, for example, you know, jack glazing, just trying to think of a few things. There's a, anyway, so, I learned so much about the different types of leather based on how it can be processed in those machines. And that's another reason I love going to the tanneries.
Yeah. It's a whole wide world, and, it's a playground. Once you get into it, it's really beautiful. It is a kitchen, and possibilities are endless. You just keep experimenting.
Yeah, man.
I love doing it. So this was great. I enjoyed talking to you a lot. You know, got the story, the perspective, and going into that shoe niche. I learned a lot. I think I'm gonna come back to you with some more questions since now I'm curious about those shoemaking stuff. Maybe I join one of your courses at some point. So I am really thankful that you came here, spent the time with us. Where does people find you, your work, you know, social media, website, and how you serve them, just to remind them one more time before we go?
Yeah, thanks. And I'd be honored to have you here for a class, man. And let's keep talking for sure. This is great. We're districtleathersupply.com, and we primarily operate on Instagram. We don't do too many emails. We have a Facebook landing zone, but don't really do anything there. So almost all of it's on Instagram, and it's at District Leather Supply. And that's where we announce releases. We also do live sales twice a week. We do those Tuesdays and Thursday nights. The premise for those is that, you know, we've got our website lineup, things that we keep in regular stock. We've got a leather hotel with everything there. And then the back of our warehouse, that's where I go to tanneries. I can find odd lots, miscellaneous things that, you know, for tannery, it's really difficult to sell one-offs and samples and things like that. And so that's one of the things we've kind of specialized in, is being able to pick up those lots and either just sell those on our live sales, or with, like opera, for example, we took a pallet of 1,000 miscellaneous skins and we turned it into different colors of elephant print just to do something unique, create something wild. So I love that aspect of it. And so we have tons of stuff in the back, and that's primarily what we sell in the live sales. So if you want something different, maybe it's a one-off, maybe we just have a couple, or it's just wild. That's what we do on our live sales.
Yeah, that might be a great chance to find truly unique things for crazy projects for beginners, you know? And probably it's not going to be as expensive as they normally would be, those specialty articles. So definitely go check it out, the live sessions, Instagram, and districtleathersupply.com. I do time to time. And yeah, again, thanks for being here. Really nice meeting you, and I will stay in touch.
Likewise, man. Thanks a lot.